Hello, this is the Counterpoint Club host, Brandon Vance. Welcome to the encore of Opus 2, Episode 4 of the Counterpoint Club, where we bring you the full interview of Annie Fullard of the Cavani Quartet. Fullard served for 30 years as artist-in-residence at the Cleveland Institute of Music, and currently holds the title of Distinguished Visiting Artist in Chamber Music at the McDuffie Center for Strings. In Episode 4, titled How to Train Your String Quartet, we take a little bit of a different approach. Instead of a history portion, we'll be including two separate interviews from a couple of legends in the chamber music world. The first is with James Dunham, former member of the Grammy-winning Cleveland Quartet and Nomburg Award-winning Sequoia Quartet. And the second is with Annie Fullard of the Cavani Quartet. These two interviews are broken up by a casual roundtable discussion with Skyros about some of our favorite coaching memories. In the following interview with Annie Fullard, we discuss some of the quartet exercises and techniques that the Cavani Quartet has developed and adopted over the past decades. Annie reminds us that humor has always been an essential part of the rehearsal process. I personally have fond memories of doing the live, breathe, and die exercises with the Cavani Quartet during my time at the Cleveland Institute of Music. Their joyful and creative approach to chamber music had a really profound impact on my career. We also discuss her new book, The Art of Collaboration, a creative resource for chamber music rehearsal techniques and team building. This is actually based on Annie's wealth of experience as a chamber music teacher, as well as some interesting business research. At the end of the interview, Annie shares some inspiring words about the power of music, as well as some practical ideas about how to make chamber music available to a broader audience. Annie is full of energy, ideas, and she's loads of fun, so I really hope you enjoy this full interview. Well, hi, Annie, and thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Well, I'm just so happy to be with both of you and celebrate all of the work you guys are doing out there.
Oh, thanks so much. What are some of the techniques that Cavani Quartet has used over the years that have contributed to quartet pedagogy?
Well, pedagogy is such a serious word, but we were just talking about the idea of the humanity of a string quartet, the conversation in a quartet, and the dynamics between four people, which are like a little microcosm of this very intense community. And these techniques came from the idea of developing something that was quantitatively repeatable, that would offer everyone in the group an equal voice. It's my belief, but based on Haydn, based on the Enlightenment, the ideals of the Enlightenment, which is that everybody is created equal. We have these ideas that we bring together and we discuss them, which is, you know, the core of chamber music. And I wish that chamber music didn't have this sort of elitist point of view, but I think that's changing because there is a proliferation of incredible, I won't say young quartets, but incredible quartets of the next generation, who are much more open about doing different repertoire, about desegregating the educational portion of what we do with the performance portion, that these things are intertwined. Mm-hmm. And so to the specific techniques, these were developed over the years. They were inspired by our teachers, because this is a sort of it's a passed down tradition, if you will, even starting as far back as Joachim, who had his own quartet, and then to Eugenie Tsai, who had his own quartet, et cetera, to the Kolisch Quartet, to the Juilliard Quartet, Cleveland, Tokyo, Cavani, Brentano, Ying, Miro, it's Chiara, et cetera. I could name them all. Anyway, over the years, we found that, and the more teaching we also did, that we wanted to make sure that everybody felt that they could take a leadership role, true leadership, which is more giving It's about more giving, and it's about responding and reflecting. So I would say that our sort of capstone technique that is a little bit unique to the Kavani world, but that we shared as a resource, is something we call live, breathe, and die. It sounds very strong, but you might remember this.
I do. I remember well.
And it comes from a kind of theory of mirroring and responding and reflecting. And actually, we could do it on Zoom. It's possible to do it on Zoom. So we should do it right now.
Okay.
This will be really fun. This is a little exercise instead of me nattering on and on. Okay. So the idea of live, breathe, and die is that it's a metaphor for your ego is dying. You lose your ego in the service of focusing on someone else other than yourself. So in such an intense way that you will live, breathe, and die for them. So as an example of that, if you just like rub your hands together for a second, both of them. Yeah. Okay, so you're creating a little bit of heat, a little friction. Let's call that like kind of energy, you know, then, and it's a little Tai Chi and a little Annie. And we just kind of feel this energy from ourselves. Now I'm gonna take this energy, I'm just gonna form it into a sphere right here, just right on my chest. And then I'm gonna send it out to you, Brandon. There you are. And then you can send yours back to me. There. And here you are, Justin. And then you take that and send it back. Okay, so that's the quick version of respond and reflect. And if I put my hand up and then you put it would be your left hand. Yes. Okay, so we're mirroring each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna move very, very slowly without saying anything, and you see if you can just, we'll move together, but I will be the main initiator. So I'm not really leading, I'm initiating the movement, and you will just move simultaneously with me. So let's say I move this way, and then I move this way, and then I move towards the screen, and then. Okay, so even over the Zoom, there's a connection there, right?
Sure,
yeah.
So let's apply that to an actual passage of music in a string quartet that you've been working on, and maybe it doesn't feel quite together. You want to have, let's say it's something from the traditional Western canon where you want to feel a kind of rubato together, you want to feel a cadential fervor, but it's just not quite lining up. So if each person in the group takes a turn becoming an initiator, but exactly what I just did, and of course you would then take a turn and say, I would lean in and visually, almost like a conductor, would send out some of my ideas, and everyone in the group would forget about everything and just live, breathe, and die for me. And then let's say we would do that in turn for you, and you might do something different. You might play the whole thing at the tip, but I'm live, breathe, and dying for you. So I'm going to play everything at the tip, right? And you want to play it really softly. And then I'm going to play it really softly, and I'm going to be watching you. And not just passively, but actively mirroring.
Mm.
So that, and then you go around the quartet. So taking the dance, and we tend not to say leading, because leading can imply following, and that implies fascism, right? And
right.
That doesn't work very well in a quartet.
No.
And since we want to hold up the ideals that Haydn set up for us, which is these four brilliant, active minds who understand their roles and can freely go you know, intertwine. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. But this is an exercise that we do with a passage of music that doesn't involve talking. You just are playing. But you're really immersed in what everybody wants to do. If somebody wants to take a little time, then you do. And you're, there's a giving and receiving. So it does involve eye contact. It involves physically embodying the character. It's a real commitment to your own musical voice, but how you share that with the group. And so I would say that's probably many ensembles that went through the intensive quartet seminar with us and with Mr. Soloff, who is our mentor and our the Gandhi of chamber music, a guiding light, who was always talking to us when we were students about connecting. If you have a line that's in dialogue with somebody else, why are you looking at your music stand? Connection, you know? If you have a whole note and somebody's playing a beautiful line, you shine. You shine that line at the other person. But this is a learned skill. So it takes practice like anything else, because you make yourself vulnerable and, you know, but I found that it's what maybe the number one rehearsal technique that works for making everybody feel like they've been heard somehow. Their musical voice has been heard. And then there are two other things that I think are very popular. One is expressive counting, where you take a passage, you put your instrument down. This is really great for groups of all ages. And you count your part with the dynamics like you are the greatest Shakespearean actor. So everything is dramatic, it's articulate, it's, you know, sort of creating in the moment. You do this together as an ensemble. It's a great way to make a connection and make a musical decision. And you subdivide, rhythmic alignment is one of the most difficult things for string quartets. It's what we spend time fussing about, is our ensemble. And then the last one I would say is that we often use with quartets that are just starting out, like, you know, like a 9-10-year-old quartet. Once we've gotten the idea of passing things around, of just moving together and like a pendulum. So you can move side to side, you can move forward and backward. And then of course you have your, here's my swivel chair. So you have this circle and you can move from that. There's a habit of, you know, classical musicians, for some reason, we don't think we're supposed to move. But I mean, dancers, actors, every other art form, they all move. Other musicians move. I don't know what it is about, get a violin and then, you know, so just, it's a way of creating like a human metronome and moving in a pulse together. And it actually, we use it all the time. So when we can't, you know, sort of agree on something, of course there's always the metronome, but something about that motion together. And there's a scientific name for that. It's called entrainment. And it comes from a, you know, a scientist in the 17th century who put pendulums in a room and they began to move together, and human beings respond to each other that way. Okay, so that's the techniques. Yada yada. Oh,
that's great. Yeah, that's so wonderful. And yeah, the fact that there's science behind all that, right? Like even heartbeats and different things, you know, when people move together, they start to, their heart rates start to align and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And I've got to say,
that's so cool.
It's just so interesting to me, because it's like meeting a family, just hearing you talk like that, it's like meeting an aunt or someone that you've never seen, or a grandmother, or like someone that you've never seen before, and
not a grandmother.
For the first time, and you're like, oh my gosh, like you see the resemblance, the familiarity, because when you're saying like the counting out loud, it's like that came from you through the Miro through. So it's like this lineage. It's so familiar, and it's just wonderful. Because we've never met before, but all that, it's just that line. It's just it's blowing my mind. It's just, you know, the
like meeting an old friend, eh?
the lineage of the ideas and how they're passed on is just, it's great.
Well, and we learn from each other, right? I mean, every time I coach a string quartet, you know, either one that's in the formative stages or somebody who's been in a group that's been playing together, and it's less of a coaching, but just a kind of, you know, we just need another set of ears. We need some, you know, kind of group focusing. And I always learn something. So it's a, you know, it's a work in progress. And because I think it's a really amazing art form that we do. And I think string quartets in particular are very special, but I'm biased. I've devoted my entire life to playing string quartets, and I love the sound of it and the music. And I think that's one of your questions was, what do you love most about it?
Yeah. That's the next one, in fact.
That's the next question. But I just have to say before we move on, and maybe you've answered it already anyway, but the next question, but John Largesse had us count out loud in this Shakespearean manner the entire Bartok Four. We were doing the Bartok Four, fourth quartet, and, you know, some tricky interactions rhythmically and everything like that. And we had to perform for him without our instruments the whole thing in this Shakespearean counting way, top to bottom. And then when we got to the instruments, it was like, well, now we just have to do this. But all the ideas that we kind of put together, and it was great. Especially for Bartok, that was fun.
For composite rhythms, when you start to be able to feel in that opening, you know, one and two and three and four and one.
Yeah.
One and two and three. And then it feels more like you're kind of knit together. So I think that they played Bartok Four at CIM, and we did that, and we used to use Bartok 4 as an example of Shakespearean counting, because there's so much, like, you know, you can really exaggerate all the, you know,
yeah, and it's so ingrained in my mind
stuff.
Yeah, and it's so like even now, even today, like ba 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 da, like that first, it's just, it's there forever now.
That little thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's so good. So good. So what do you most, anything else that you love about quartet playing?
Oh, well, okay. So right now I'm in this moment where I love, you know, meeting you, Justin, and I feel the same way. Like I've known you forever, and seeing you, Brandon, and just, I'm really excited about what you are doing, and I want to celebrate. You know, I wish that I had, a plethora of funding. I would just fund every string quartet without even a grant application.
Right.
Nice.
Okay. Send me your favorite whoopee cushion, and then you'll win $1 million for being. No. Anyway, but I think, you know, the music, as I said to somebody, the music did not get sick in this. The music doesn't have COVID. Beethoven didn't get COVID. Mendelssohn, you know, and the discoveries that we're making, I think it's every group's responsibility to play as many living composers as possible, to work with composers, and to play as much music that stretches you and gives you a different perspective of the history of what we do. We all should worship our ancestors, and we should know about where this music came from and how it was created. And it's not just, it is a Western canon because it comes from you know, Vienna and that, but the influences for Haydn were Croatian and Hungarian and et cetera. So kind of thinking a little bit bigger. I love that about string quartet playing. I love that it pushes us all the time, intellectually, cognitively. And then I love the empathy of it. You know, I really wish I could go to Congress and just put them in little groups and do, you know, and just say, what would it be like if you just did exactly what, you know, this person was thinking, and then the other way around. I mean, just to open the mind.
They literally need to do that.
I was going to say, that's not like a, that, let's go do it now. Let's propose this. Let's just go in with our instrument. Just have them count theater, do Shakespeare counting together.
Totally do it. It would be good. And so the music, the dynamic of working together, I love the sound of it. I don't know. There's not too much that I don't love, except for maybe the farting, but you could take that. don't put that in. Although some people might laugh.
Well, they'll get it. They'll get it.
Yeah. Sense of humor. Yeah. You know, every quartet has their own inside jokes that they bond over.
The camaraderie, yeah.
I think it's dangerous if you don't have a sense of humor and a sense of the absurd and a sense of humility too, but like some self-awareness, because there's nothing more grueling than three other people sort of saying, oh, do you know that your idiosyncrasies? Yeah. Anyway, so it's good. It's good.
Interpersonal communication, all those skills.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
All right. So how has the Cavani Quartet been dealing with lockdown? What have you been up to, and any personal projects for, this is a three-parter, I guess it's kind of three questions in one. Any personal projects for you that you've been working on?
For the lockdown, we finally decided in the middle of the summer that we were going a little crazy. And so we felt that it was safe. Catherine was in Canada and she drove down, and Eric had been quarantined. We had all been, nobody had been going anywhere. So we felt that we could get together and form our own little quartet pod. And so we were rehearsing for a project that originally we were planning to do this fall, which, like you, was a program called Beyond Beethoven, which included music of living composers of color. Jesse, Gabby, a Cleveland composer named Eric Gould, and a commission from Michi Wianco, who was before you, I think, at CIM, but she's okay. An amazing violinist and composer and artist and mind. Anyway, so we had this big project planned, and so we just hunkered down. We just used the time to rehearse in my living room with my cats, and, you know, and then we would, Eric is an amazing baker. His bread is probably the best bread I've ever had. And I'm serious about that. I want him to like market it or something. It was just so he would come over with these like loaves of bread. So we would carbo load on the break, you know, and then get sleepy and then try to rehearse. So
that sounds perfect.
You know, have the time to be able to spend 3 or 4 hours on a movement or a section of a movement. Just really trying different things. Quartets don't often have that kind of time. So we just tried to get into the process and start to use technology too. Some people in the group are better than that than others. So
any personal projects that you're working on right now?
I would like to market Eric's, you know, my colleague's really amazing baking and get him on the British baking show, but he's not that interested in that. But Other than
My
that,
big thing is beer, which is liquid bread, as they say. I've been brewing a lot of beer.
okay. So
I found that it's actually I'm not bad at it, so.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.
that would be really fun to have like a tasting chamber music reading. I think that would be.
That would be a fun party. That's the one thing about chamber musicians. They seem to be like the people in classical music that are the most fun, really. Let's be real. They're the most fun.
Yeah. So no, personal projects. I mean, my son came home from school, and so it was really nice. He's a junior now and a violist. He went back to New York, so he's back there now. And I was sort of minding his business in the summer. that I've been working on a book and
That's a good segue.
trying to look into the distance. And also, I would say that on a more serious note, that I've been reading everything I can get my hands on and just really trying to figure out what I can do to protest, to resist, to be more aware, be kinder, be help with systemic racism. I see it all the time, and I want to do more.
So let's talk about your new book, The Art of Collaboration, a Creative Resource for Chamber Music Rehearsal Techniques and Team Building.
Well, I think one can draw an analogy with team work and sports teams and music, first of all. So the idea that you practice your skills as an individual, that you are, when you're part of a collaborative unit, you want to enable and empower your colleagues to be the best they can. And so sort of applying that idea to chamber music rehearsal techniques, some of which I talked about earlier.
Right.
Over the years, because I was offering an independent study in chamber music pedagogy, because I'm very interested in keeping the generations, that students at conservatory not segregate performance from teaching, that both are an art form. I began to write down all of these rehearsal techniques and use them as sort of a pedagogical guide. And they were inspired, my colleagues and I, we all came up with these things together. So it wasn't me. I just happened to write them down. And we were approached in 2010 by someone who was doing their dissertation on, it's a very serious name. I have to read it. Coaching strategies and techniques, building empowered and collaborative teams by applying principles of chamber music pedagogy. And this person's name is Dorianne Cotter-Lockard. She got her doctorate, and that was her dissertation. And she sent out inquiries to a whole bunch of different string quartets asking if they had rehearsal techniques that they used. And she wanted to apply this to maybe a corporate setting or a scenario, like, would there be some overlap? And I responded with my list that, had Shakespearean counting and chamber music aerobics and Shine the Light and all kinds of silly names, rhythm buddies, and things that seem a little bit maybe silly, but really help a group to develop their team. So especially when you're working with younger chamber music, with younger groups. So she wrote her dissertation, and a few years later called me up and said, this is very popular on the dissertation website in the universe, and we should write a book. So that's what's happening, and we're writing this together. She actually lives in France, and I'm in Cleveland, so we have a lot of Zoom calls before Zoom was a thing. We were Zooming, and any excuse to go to France, right? So I was traveling there, and met a lot of wonderful expat musicians who love playing chamber music and were kind of interested in, they had their set ways of working, and they were interested to try some of these techniques. So it became a laboratory in a way. And so the book is written, and we have sent a proposal into Oxford University Press, and they responded favorably. And then we're redoing some things that they asked us to work on. And yeah, and it's really exciting. And every time I talk to another group, more ideas come. So the other wonderful thing about this book is it's not really just a Cavani voice. It's us, sort of. We interviewed the members of the Cleveland Quartet, the original four, and members of the Tokyo Quartet, Juilliard Quartet. So some of those wonderful ensembles, and then Catalyst Quartet and the Harlem Quartet, all these groups that are out there. So I'll probably call you guys up and say, so what are you guys doing in the rehearsals? Who brings the whoopee cushion? That's
That's
the
right.
most.
Whoopee cushion,
Yeah, we
yes.
had a whoopee cushion and a fart machine at one point in our quartet,
Oh boy.
just so you know
And
that
this is all in the
full
official
disclosure.
research document.
This is at the chapter, 10 plus.
Oh,
Flatulence. Quartet flatulence.
that's lovely. So when's it coming out, Annie?
So we're hoping that, because it's been a little bit slow because we don't,
Right.
we aren't in the same place, but we're hoping to resend the proposal in before the end of the year and sometime in 2021.
Sometime next year, we'll be on the lookout. Oh, I'm super excited about it. It sounds like just a wonderful resource, and just insight into so much of just chamber music and, the life of the chamber musician, as it were. And yeah, I'm just really looking forward to it. So definitely keep us posted. Well.
It's also the idea is to reimagine a kind of old style of coaching,
Okay.
and turn it into something where you start from a positive point rather than what the group didn't do well. So there's also that kind of philosophy there. And that actually is a philosophy, a management philosophy called appreciative inquiry. Which you should look up. It's really amazing. And
Appreciative inquiry.
appreciative inquiry, it's called AI. And it
Okay.
was created by a professor at the Weatherhead School of Management. So it's used as an executive MBA and MBA theories of leadership in groups and generative, building a generative team. But it applies very readily to string quartet playing. So, and also teaching, finding what works and using that as a catalyst to improve what needs to be improved.
All right, so our next question is, what advice from an educational standpoint would you have for students who want to pursue a career in chamber music?
Be courageous, be humble. Have a sense of humor, ask for advice, call people, talk to other people, talk to other groups. We learn from each other. You just never know. And our wonderful world is very connected, and sometimes, we should help each other out. I think it's important to know the history of what we do and understand, sort of the ancestry of it, and then have a world perspective, So not just saying, okay, we just study the Western canon, but what other scale systems are there in the world, there's all of the East Asian scale systems, and there are all the Indian ragas and scale systems. So, broaden your perspective, know things, be curious. Be committed, hang in there, you know, and if something's going on in the group, ask for some help, you know, not like therapy help, but talk to some people who might say, hey, you know, you could try this, you could try that. We need to commit to each other, and it's not always easy. It can be difficult to learn how to work together. But it's certainly worth it. I think from this pandemic, I hope that more artists will look locally rather than feel like, well, if I'm not living in a big city, you know, then what am I doing? What is our group doing? You can make a residency anywhere, and this country needs it. We need it. We need, you know, the Ying Quartet did a rural residency in Iowa. I'm sure that you have, and I know we have done residencies all over the country, not in the major cities where there's a kind of, you know, people who are sort of familiar with cultural life, but going out and using music as well. Daniel Bernard Romain said this the other day. He was like, your instrument is your weapon. I like that. you know, music, maybe we need it to, we need to think a little bit more intensely about how music can really break down some barriers. It's a language that people love, and live music. I mean, Zoom is great and it's what we have to do right now, but as soon as we can get out there and go into, you know, communities all across the United States, I think we'd be surprised by what we learned from that.
Yeah,
that's so true.
In different perspectives that are there.
And people love, I mean, we played at a polling place at my local elementary school, and every walk of life, people were coming in and voting, and they just like, oh, we love hearing this music, you know, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and it takes their shields down as a weapon, if you know.
Play Bart. And anything, because we all can find things to relate to in the humanity and the experience of these composers. So
it's a primarily disarming weapon.
How about that? We have a disarming weapon. Anti-weapon.
So our last question kind of has something to do with the question before. And, you know, I feel like there are more and more resources available for chamber music lovers and, you know, and people who are interested in it, and especially, and it just keeps on growing and growing. What would you like to highlight? What would some resources that you'd like to highlight for people who are interested in investigating about chamber music a little more?
Well, I think we do have to think outside the box, which I think most of, you know, the generation of quartets that's living and playing out there, thinking about your programming, thinking about your relationship to a community, and not about touring, but about what your local relationship is. And I think people would be surprised at what kind of support you could get doing that in a school system. In community organizations and art museums. And so not just looking at the small, but kind of looking a little bit, I mean, I already said this, looking locally at all kinds of different permutations of things. Anything educational, people will love to have a music component to that. So you can curriculum build, stretch your repertoire that way. I mean, obviously social media, I know that it is often used as a kind of a negative tool, but I've seen Facebook and Facebook Messenger and the, I call it Insta-Snap.
Insta-Snap.
Make fun of my son. Anyway, Instagram and Snapchat, right?
Well, now it's TikTok is the new one.
Yeah, I have no idea, but, you know, TikTok. That's like what my quartet says to me. TikTok, time to stop talking. So social media is great for us. I mean, I have met more people through Facebook Messenger that were like, you know, oh, I was at CIM and we did this and da da da, and what you're doing, and then we have a Zoom call, and so stay in touch with people, with your peers, with your, you know, mentors, and so I think social media can work in our favor. It's good for classical music, and it's good for communication and creating the web. There's Chamber Music America. They are now pretty broad spectrum. I mean, I'm constantly thinking about what maybe string quartets could do for each other if we formed a kind of network and, you know, a kind of global infrastructure where we all toured in different places and came and did residencies in each other's communities. That could be really cool. So I'll let you know when I win the lottery, and
that's right.
We can do that
on the International Chamber Music Guild.
Yes, right. Yes. If it were my idea would be that, you know, you would do a residency, you'd be paid significantly, beautifully well, stay in a really, be treated well, and eat well and drink well and be able to, you know, make music in all kinds of different ways. But maybe someday. Yeah.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for your time. And this has just been such a treat talking with you, reconnecting with you. And just, it's great to see that you're still on fire and still just has such a positive influence in the world on so many groups and so many ways.
Well, thank you. It's so nice to be with you, even from far away. And I'm just so excited for the quartet. And I can't wait to hear you guys live. And as soon as we have our International Quartet Fest, Quartet Love Fest, then, you know, you're on. Woo, come to Cleveland.
Yeah, I can't wait. It'll be great.
Thank you so much to Annie Fullard for being with us on the Counterpoint Club.
The Counterpoint Club is brought to you by the nonprofit organization Chamber Music Madness. The hosts are Sarah Pizzacami, Brandon Vance, Justin Curries, and Willie Braun of the Skyros Quartet. Our producer is Sharon Wong, and our audio engineer is Hunter Rath. The theme music for the Counterpoint Club was composed by Brandon Vance and performed by the Skyros Quartet. The managing director for Chamber Music Madness is Virginia Wright. Thank you to our Chamber Music Madness sponsors, 4Culture, ACMP, Associated Chamber Music Players, the Seattle Office of Arts and Culture, and Arts Fund. You can find the Counterpoint Club on all platforms for podcasts. Visit our website, thecounterpointclub.org, for additional resources.